sharing you that video this morning because I want you to know and hear from people who aren't Christians that just as much as there are people who don't want you to share the faith and don't want you to talk about Jesus, there are atheists out there and are people out there that welcome it and want you to. And they would actually say the other way, that they would think, if you don't tell me about Jesus, if we don't have that conversation, I don't have that respect for you. So if you're worried about losing respect, you're going to lose it either way. So you might as well just go for it and share your faith. And I'm sharing that with you because I want you to know that we should be sharing our faith and telling people about Jesus. But as we talked about last week, when we introduced our series for the summer, is that when we share our message of Jesus, we are going to hear more objections about Jesus, and they're going to actually open up and share why they don't believe more often than if we didn't share. And because of that, we have to know how to respond in kind and be gentle and think through their objections well. And so one of those objections that people bring up very often is the idea of hell. People don't like Jesus because there's hell. When you talk about people's objections to the faith, there's usually two camps you can kind of categorize people's objections. There's empirical objections, which have to do with stuff like the creation versus evolution or the mistranslation of the Bible, the fact that maybe religions have caused all wars, just look at the Crusades, or that maybe that Jesus is a copycat of Roman gods. Here's a bunch of Roman gods that did the exact same thing as Jesus, and Jesus is just a copycat. Here's some evidence. Those are the empirical reasons why people don't believe in Jesus. But then there's a whole other camp of reasons that are philosophical reasons that people don't believe in Jesus. And those are questions you've probably heard too. Those have to do with stuff like, how can a good God allow for suffering? How many of you have heard that one before? How many of you struggle with that yourself? Yes, I'm glad you're honest. Or maybe this one, Christians are hypocrites, so why would I trust them? Or maybe Christians are intolerant people. Or our last one, why would a good God send people to hell? It's a very honest question. My remote's not working, guys. I'm just going to have to get you to do it. Hit it again. And let me see if it works now. Oh, yeah. Look at that. So it's a very good question. Many people have been appalled by the idea of eternal punishment. It goes beyond a doubt to kind of more of a repulsion of the idea. In fact, it's one of Charles Darwin's reasons why he rejected the faith. He said this, "I can indeed hardly see how anyone ought to wish Christianity to be true. For if it is in plain language of the text, it seems to show that men who do not believe, and that would include my father, my brother, and almost all my friends, will have an everlasting punishment, and that is a damnable doctrine." It's not a very nice doctrine. I think that there are a lot of things in the Bible that I don't want to preach, right? And, you know, and probably one of the top five of those lists is hell. And you want to know why? I think the church should be good and positive and upbeat. And as soon as you mention sin or hell, you know, I can feel it. I can feel the depression in the room. It's like everyone's a big balloon, and I just kind of let out the air. Right? It feels depressing and mean and mean-spirited. And I don't want to be the guy that's the hellfire and brimstone guy or the blowhorn guy that's standing in the street corner saying, "Hey, you're a sinner and you're an evil person and you're going to hell." And so I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it, but I feel like we have to, because what winds up happening is people have really strong objections to it. And in fact, there's three that I think that come to mind very relatively. It's this, is that hell is repulsive, hell is unjust, and hell is overkill. When we talk about to our non-Christian friends about hell, those are kind of the three kind of pushbacks that I hear when I talk about hell, when we talk about hell. It kind of goes like this. You're sitting with your friend in the coffee shop, or I don't know, in the combine, the field, whatever, and you're telling them about Jesus, and they sit there and say, I can get behind everything, but you're telling me that there's a place where God sends people who don't believe the right things, and he sends them there and punishes them for all of eternity, and you want me to believe in that? If you think about it from their perspective, it is kind of a tough sell, isn't it? No nods? Okay, everyone's good with this then. All right. Well, I think we do need to talk about it. And the reason we need to talk about it is because I want you, I tell you why, I think I want to say this morning that as we talk about hell, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to couch this message in this previous verse. Can you hit the previous slide, guy, with a verse from Ezekiel? I'm going to say, and it's going to be tough to think about this, I'm going to say that hell is one of the ways that God shows that he loves you and he cares for you and that he thinks the world of you. It's very graceful. Hell is very graceful. Now, I know that that's hard to think, but I want you to think for a minute. If you were coming to me and I was sitting before you and I said to you, you know, God is good and he loves you and all this thing, and you came to me and said, how do I know that God's good? I would point to three things. I would point to the doctrine of common grace, which is the idea that God makes the rain fall on the just and the unjust, that he blesses those who don't know him, that he gives them food and provides for them and provides wealth and enjoyment, even to people who don't know him. That's not true of every God out there. All right? Then I would actually point to the cross. I would point to the cross as the way that Jesus would love you too. But I would also point to the idea of hell. And the reason I say that is because of this verse. It comes from Ezekiel 18:32. And this verse isn't specifically about hell. It's actually in context about Israel's punishment for not following God. But I think it kind of sums up God's heart well on punishment. And it says this, "For I have no pleasure in the death of anyone, declares the Lord. So turn and live." Let me say that again. "For I have no pleasure in the death of anyone, declares the Lord. So turn and live." And so what I want you to hear when we talk about hell is not that God enjoys it or gets some sort of sadistic kind of pleasure from watching people torture. I want you to know that he is a very loving God. And I want to couch the doctrine of hell in that context. So let me talk about why we need to talk about it first. Number one is that we need to talk about it because our embarrassment leads to ignorance. Let me say that again. We need to talk about it because we're embarrassed about it. I've seen a lot of time, I've spent a lot of time in church over the years, and I've watched trends and ghosts since 2003. Everything from the prayer of Jabez, you guys remember that, to holy laughter, people going in church and being so consumed by the Holy Spirit that they laugh uncontrollably, to the Rob Bell movement and the emergent church, to the health and wealth gospel, to the Mark Driscoll era of Christianity, where it was cool to be reformed, to the more progressive Christianity that we see today. There's lots of trends. And what I've noticed in church is that whenever culture says that there's something popular or an idea that is popular, the church kind of goes along with it. And when there's an idea that's unpopular in culture, the church kind of gets embarrassed about it. And what I mean by that is they don't outright deny the doctrine. They just stop talking about it. And hell is one of those things that we stop talking about. And what happens is if you don't talk about the doctrines that you are embarrassed for long enough, you create a decade of church ignorance. And then what happens is some guy like Rob Bell writes a book it says love wins. And he comes out and says, don't worry about it. Everyone's going to heaven. And the most Bible-believing Christian accepts it because we haven't talked about it a lot. So number one, we talk about it because we need to address our ignorance. Number two, we need to talk about it because hell is a Jesus thing. It's a Jesus thing. Everyone likes Jesus. Madonna likes Jesus. Justin Timberlake likes Jesus. Everyone's got t-shirts and hoodies that say, Jesus is my homeboy. You know, the other day I was watching this New Age documentary, and they had this prolific New Age speaker there. And he gets on, and he starts talking about Christians. And he says this. He says, you know, all these Christians, they're ranting and raving about the wrath of God and being angry at God and judging God. And they don't really understand that the summary of Jesus' ministry is the Sermon on the Mount. And of course, what he's talking about there is he's talking about, you know, loving your neighbor and turning the other cheek and being graceful. But when you hear that, what you realize is that he never actually read the Sermon on the Mount. Because it's in the Sermon on the Mount where hell comes up as a central idea in almost every parable that Jesus talks about. For example, Matthew chapter 5, verse 22 says this, I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says to you, you fool, will be liable for the fire of hell. Later on, it says this, if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better for you to lose one part of your members than to be thrown into hell. And if your right eye causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than for you to be thrown into hell. Here's what I want to say about this. The doctrine of hell, and what we understand hell to be, isn't fully realized until you get to Jesus himself. He's the one that talks about it. Hell isn't in the Old Testament, it's in the New Testament. So all this talk about the Old Testament being punished and God being angry and wrathful, and the New Testament where Jesus is meek and mild, it's not necessarily true. What I would say is that if the grace of Jesus or God kind of amps up in the New Testament, it's also true that his anger amps up in the New Testament, because hell is the thing that Jesus talks about. In fact, if you were to take Jesus' parables, if you were to categorize all that Jesus would say into different categories, and you put the parables in one category, mention of hell or punishment or death or anything like that from Jesus makes up about half the parables. So he talks about it quite a bit. And so because Jesus talks about it, we need to talk about it. Right? Because it's a Jesus thing. Hell is a Jesus thing. Now, really quickly, let me tell you about what hell is, just so that we're on the same page, and I'm going to put the references on the screen there, so you can follow along. The difficulty with topical sermons, let me tell you this, is you're not anchored in one passage, you're anchored in all of the passages, and that makes it really hard. But I want you to know that there is, the references are on screen, so you can know what I'm talking about here. I'm just going to give us a quick definition of hell, and then I'm going to address people's objections. So number one, because God's love compels him to be a just God, God must punish humanity for sin. He would not be a just God if he didn't, because then you could argue that God does not love us because he's passive and evil. It's very interesting, people's objections for a minute. So on one hand, there are people that object to Jesus because of all the evil and suffering in the world, right? Why haven't you done anything about it? Okay? And they won't believe in Jesus because he's passive on the issue of evil and suffering. He hasn't done anything about it. But then on the flip side, when you say he has done something about it, people don't like it either. He's not just, or he's unjust either way. The punishment for sin is both a physical death and an eternal death. Eternal punishment is where God will perfectly punish those who love sin for all eternity. Hell is a place of conscious punishment for the wicked. This is known as an unquenchable suffering, and it is both a relational separation from God and a physical separation from God. So that's what hell is. That's in a nutshell. And I'm not going to talk any more than that because I know that most of us are familiar with that concept. What I'd like to do for the rest of the time is address people's concerns about it from the perspective of somebody who has never become a Christian before. So the first thing I'm going to say is that hell is repulsive. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Hell is repulsive. Hell is not so much a doubt as a repulsion.
When you talk to somebody about the idea of hell, and they push back on it, and they have doubts that it exists, it's not so much the idea that they doubt it as much the idea that they don't like it. Okay? They don't like the idea of hell. Hell is one of those things that you can't empirically prove one way or another this side of eternity. It's not like we're having a conversation about translating the Bible here and you can prove that one way or another. So when people object, it's more of a philosophical one here. You don't believe in hell. I want to say this very carefully. You don't believe in hell because you're repulsed by it. Because it doesn't feel right in your stomach. Someone brings it up and you're like, I don't like it.
And let me tell you right away that that's really a bad way to judge what's right and wrong.
If you can't judge what's right and wrong based upon what feels right. There's lots of things in this world that feel right but are bad for you. Okay? Similarly, there's a lot of things that feel bad for you, but they're good for you. Just today or tomorrow, we're going to the hospital for a test. Liz has to take a test for celiac, and they were telling me about it, and they stick a tube all the way down your throat and into your intestines and take a sample of your intestines. And I'm saying, that can't feel good.
There's nothing about that that feels good. Okay?
But it's good for you. And we have to understand that what winds up happening is that we are a product of our culture.
When you say something like, I don't like hell because hell is not a good idea, and I'm right about everything, the reason that you don't like hell is because you've been already convinced of other ideas and values in your life.
What I'm trying to say is you need to be self-aware of all the other presuppositions and biases that you bring into this question. You don't come into this question as an empty slate of information and therefore totally objective. What I mean by that is there's an entire worldview that's being constructed for you that is either pushing you towards the idea of hell as a good thing or away from the idea of hell. So you have grown up here in Canada. You're part of a democratic country. You're probably educated. You're a Westerner. You've probably been watching CNN or Fox News, and you drive by the billboards every time you go into the town of Three Hills, and there's been an entire worldview constructed for you, all right? And I want to say that when we talk about the idea of hell, we have to be very careful that you're not such a product of your cultural moment that you deny something that's been in existence for 2,000 years.
Maybe the cultural moment that you live in isn't the best way to decide what is right and wrong for Christianity.
And so when you and I come to hell and we don't like it and we have doubts on it, you have to dig deep and be honest about your bias and ask the question, I don't like hell because I'm repulsed by it, and therefore you have to ask the question, why? Right? I have to be honest with my biases, right?
So here's a question I want to throw out to you. And this could apply to any doctrine, but it could apply to the doctrine of hell too. It says, and I want to ask this, if God came down and we could ask him straight out and he would give a straight and clear answer and it was an answer that you didn't like, would you submit to it?
Would you submit to it? I want you to be honest with that, because if you have an honest answer to that question, you've just identified what's more important to you.
God's opinion or yours? Like,
and then secondly, how much of your repulsion of hell influences what you believe about it? Be honest about that. How much of your distaste for it influences what you believe or don't believe about hell? You have to dig down deep. You have to understand that when we talk about hell, we're repulsed by it, and quite frankly, we should be, right? So that's objection number one. Objection number two is that hell is unjust. It goes like this. The punishment doesn't fit the crime. Hell is too heavy-handed and harsh. There is a strong, this is a very strong objection, and many Christians and even Bible scholars come up with other options that they feel are more compatible with Christianity. They believe if God extinguishes everyone from existence, that is just as good, or God will bring everyone to heaven. And those are the two popular ideas right now in conservative Christianity. We're not talking about liberal Christianity. I'm talking about Bible-believing, evangelical Christianity. There is a movement right now to say that hell does not exist, that we've got it wrong. And so God doesn't actually send people to punish and torture for all of eternity. He just snuffs them out of existence. Or he punishes them for this little bit, and afterwards everyone comes into heaven. Like, and I want you to, and I'm going to tell you why that's a bad idea, because here's why it's a bad idea. If you get rid of the idea of hell, if you just kind of say that everyone ceases to exist, or everyone goes to heaven when they die, and that's the end of the story, you still deal with the question of a mean God. You don't get rid of the answer. You don't get rid of the problem, right? We have to be very careful with our motives for asking. I want you to look at Matthew chapter 22, verse 15, if you throw that slide up, guys, for me, there for you. This is the story of the Pharisees asking Jesus whether or not it is appropriate to pay taxes or not pay taxes, okay? And I want you to see what it says in verse 15 about this. It says this, "Then the Pharisees went and plotted how to," what does it say? "Entangle him in his words." And so you know the story. They go to Jesus, and they kind of flatter him, and they say, "Hey, Jesus, we know you're a good teacher. You're the bomb. You're awesome. You know, you, whatever you say is right. Hey, tell us. We're just kind of curious. We want to know, should we pay taxes to Caesar or not?" It was a legitimate question of that time that people did want to know the answers to. And so what I want you to hear in saying that is this, is not every question has a genuine motive behind asking. Now, I'm not saying that every time that you doubt something in Scripture that you are somehow have an ulterior motive. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that sometimes there is there. And you have to be very aware about why you have these motives. Okay? So here's what I mean. In the academic world of Christianity, the question is framed like this. We want to make sure that we interpret the words of Jesus correctly. Okay? And you know what? I think we got them wrong. And so they will make this big argument that when Jesus comes to hell, talks about hell, what Jesus does is he's talking metaphorically, because that's what Jesus does. He kind of comes in and out of talking between something clear and something allegorical. And so when he's mentioning hell, he's not saying it's a literal place. He's saying that it is allegorical. That's the argument from a sort of biblical point of view against hell. But what I want to say in that is, while I want to be a person who represents the words of Jesus correctly, I also know that the reason I'm asking that question is because I don't want it to exist in the first place. Okay? What you find very easily is, like, there, when you come out of a Western culture, there are people who have very, very different ideas about hell. Okay? Let me say this correctly. I just want to make sure. Listen, I want you to picture this.
You all know of stories in Africa where Barack Obama or whatever his name is went and kidnapped all those girls. You remember? Thank you. I got his name wrong. Listen, I want you to ask those parents what they think about hell, right? You ask them how they feel. Parents who have lost their kids and their kids have been kidnapped, some as young as 10 years old and forced to be sex slaves. You ask them how they feel about men who will never be punished on this side of eternity, and when they die, they get to go to heaven. You ask them whether or not that's a good idea. You ask them whether or not they like the idea of someone being punished for the wrongs that they have done. I guarantee you, they're not losing any sleep over it. They're not. You see, while we in North America say we won't worship a God because he punishes people, there are cultures out there that say the exact opposite. We won't follow a God unless he gives us justice and mercy and kind. And you have to understand that there are 7 billion people in the world today. And that some of those people are oppressing other people. That they're raping, that they're selling people into slavery, that there's genocide, and they're going to have a good life. And they will have a good life until the day that they die. And your answer to that is to say, don't worry about it. They'll just cease to exist. The oppressed do not get justice if you get rid of the idea of hell. Because there are people out there that are asking God to bring justice to them, to vindicate them, and they will never see it this side of eternity. Do you see what I'm saying? The rest of the world doesn't always think that we do. And I want, friends, God has a huge love for us. I want to really reiterate what Ezekiel 18:23 says. It says this, Have I any pleasure in the death of the wicked, declares the Lord? Would I rather not that they should turn and run away and live? Yet you say, in verse 25, the Lord is not just. Isn't that interesting? For I have no pleasure in the death of anyone, declares the Lord, so turn and live. God doesn't send people to hell because he enjoys it. He breaks its heart. You need to hear that God is a just God and a loving God. But somewhere along the line, we flip it. Okay? Murderous Wolf, he's a philosopher who lived in Croatia and watched family and friends murdered and died. He said this, it takes the quiet of a suburban home for the birth of the thesis of God's refusal to judge in a scorched land soaked in the blood of the innocent. It will invariably die as one watched it die, and one will do well to reflect on many other pleasantries of the liberal mind. The idea, friends, that we could sit and judge whether or not God can judge, that we're not going to take it. You know, I'm really afraid about the attitude that I've had and a lot of people have had about when we come to hell. Because there's kind of two attitudes that are going around. There's a heartlessness about it where we have to understand that when we talk about it, that this is real people. And sometimes when we have conversations about hell, we forget that. But there's also an arrogance about it. There's an arrogance about it. And it kind of goes like this. Well, I wouldn't believe in a God who would do something that, what, you wouldn't do? Think the way that you wouldn't think? Isaiah 55 says this, my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. As high as the heavens are above the earth, that's how much higher my ways are than your ways. And that's how much higher my thoughts are than your house. So, did you ever consider the possibility that the Creator's sense of justice is more developed than your own? And then when you say something you start off the conversation with saying something like, well, I wouldn't believe in a God who would what? Do this or that. You understand what you've done there is you've just submitted God to your own line of thinking. Could it be that his mercy and his grace are perfect and yours aren't? And so when we come to the idea of hell, maybe it's more just. Lastly, we want to address the idea that hell is overkill. This is a one I hear a lot too, and it's the idea of this. A person lives and dies for 80 years, and they get punished forever. And it's too long. Like, the punishment doesn't really fit the crime. And so what I'm going to say about that is that a punishment isn't really based on how long it takes to do the crime. It may take 7 seconds to kill somebody. You don't go to jail for 7 seconds, right? The punishment is really based upon the weightiness of the issue. So here's a good example. After church, we're all going to say hi and bye and all that kind of thing. And then we're going to drive home. And I'm going to drive all the way back to Three Hills. And you know, on that way there, I'm going to see a gopher. And I'm going to hit that gopher, right? And I'm going to feel bad about it because I'm from Vancouver and we like all animals and all that kind of thing. Like, and I'm going to stop the car, right? And I'm going to get out of the car and you're going to get out of it. You saw that I hit the gopher and you're going to come out of the house and you're going to say, Dan, you hit a gopher. I was like, yeah, I was kind of trying to. I hit him. Are you going to call the cops on me? No. You're probably going to give me a high five. That thing is going to get in your crops or whatever, right? Are you going to get back in the car and go? Now, suppose that I was driving back and your son or daughter came across the road and I hit them. I get out of the car, you come out of the house. Are you going to let me go? Probably not. You're going to call the police. You're going to call 911, right? And if it's a spider, I run out of a spider, you're not coming out of your house at all, right? But what I'm trying to say is there's a weightiness, there's a value against, there's a value of animals and all living things. And so when we talk about sin and we talk about who we're sinning against the God of the universe. And so the punishment is against him. So it's not about, oh, you know, I had like 5 speeding tickets and I'm going to go to hell for all eternity. It's not that. It's more you are sinning against God himself, that you an eternal being. Eternal being. The other thing I want to say about that is that there is an assumption that when people go to hell, they stop sinning. I was listening to one commentator talk about this, and they were talking about the parable of of the rich man who went to hell and the poor man who went to heaven. You know the story. And what's interesting is that more than one Bible scholar noted that there's no indicator that he stops sinning. So when he sees Moses in there, he notice what he does. He doesn't really ask to get out of hell. There's no indicator that he stops sinning. The sin continues. You and I have to understand that it's this ongoing personal thing where people, it's not just that you did a bunch of bad things, it's just that you won't accept Jesus. And I want to say this, is that there are some people out there who won't, if you gave them the option, they would not want to go to heaven because they would have to submit to Jesus. They would rather be there in hell. You know, D.A. Carson puts it this way, if I can remember correctly. Hell is simply the echo of that decision you made a million times in your life. He says, hell is not a place for people who are consigned because they were pretty good people who didn't believe the right stuff for 80 years. They're consigned there first and foremost because they defy their maker and want to be the center of the universe. Hell is not filled with people who have already repented and only God isn't gentle enough or good enough to let them out. It's filled with people who for eternity still want to be the center of their own universe. And you might be like, that's ridiculous. Who would think that way? Well, you have to remember, you got to think of it like a kid. The other day, James threw a complete temper tantrum. All we were asking him to do was go to the bathroom. No! I don't want to! And he's screaming and yelling, and my ears started bleeding, and all that kind of thing. So we disciplined him. We threw him in his room. Like, no, I don't want to go in my room. I don't want to be there. No, no, no. And it just, like, amped up, like, 10 times. Like, we heard that for the next hour and a half, believe it or not. And we went in the room. It's like, do you want out? Yeah, I want out. Okay, well, go to the bathroom. No, I don't want to go to the bathroom. Right? You get it? James won't do what we asked him to do. He'd rather sit in his room than do what we asked him to do. And I think that's true sometimes with people in their relationship with God. They would rather be separate from God than be with him. So you have to understand that. Now, lastly, as we conclude, I want to say this. And this is really what I want to get at the heart of. Okay? I believe that God is a very loving God, that he cares for us, and he loves us, and he wants us to know him. And I want to say this. If you eliminate hell from your doctrine, you don't understand what it is that Jesus went through on the cross. You don't. When he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? At that moment, what is happening is that God the Father is pouring out all the wrath and all the punishment for all the past sins, all the past evils, all the current evils, and all the anything that will become on the person of Jesus. We call this the penal substitutionary atonement. That's sort of the theological term for it, right? That God pours it all out on Jesus himself. And in that moment, Jesus experiences a separation from God himself. And if you take that away, if you take the doctrine of hell away, what you've done is you've taken away your value as a human being. Right? You don't understand your intrinsic worth to God. You don't understand the depths of suffering that God himself actually went through to purchase you back. All you get is a sentimental God. He just does some stuff over here. He likes everybody, and some old uncle plays checkers in the garden somewhere and never really gets mad at anyone. Like, but God does have anger because he's a loving God. He thinks about and sees all the evil that happens for all of human existence, and it breaks his heart. And it makes him angry because he loves you. Like, and he took on hell that you and I deserve, so that no one listening right now to this message, to the words that I say, has to go there. Hell is a way of showing that God loves you and is gracious because it shows exactly what he was willing to purchase for you. It shows your worth. It shows how much you were worth it to him. Like, that's why hell is loving and graceful. And here's my fear. My fear is that for some reason, you're not going to believe in this because you're stuck in your alternate beliefs. And you think that freedom is simply a way to not be, is being not old-fashioned. But I don't want you to actually accept a doctrine that makes you again to slavery. What you are doing is you're reading the teleprompter of the culture that's telling you what you're supposed to believe and not to believe and what to accept it. And what I want to say is God actually might be speaking through you, even this weird, repulsive doctrine, that you have value and worth in the eyes of God. And that's why the doctrine of hell is so important. Because it shows he's just. Because it shows he's willing to take on all that for you. So in closing, I want to say this. For I have no pleasure in the death of anyone, declares the Lord. So turn and live. And I can't think of a better way to remember Jesus' death on the cross than communion. And so right now I'm going to ask the ushers to come up.